Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
I mean, why didn't they just use Harry Holt's high school nickname, Puss? These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
Search The Dead Can't Sue podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
From the number one rating talk show to the New South Wales local court, Alan Jones is now weeks away from a highly anticipated trial where he will fight sex abuse charges. I'm Stephen Stockwell. This is the case of Alan Jones.
Veteran broadcaster Alan Jones has been a giant of the Australian media landscape.
Some people said that he was more powerful than the Prime Minister.
There is an 83-year-old male arrested this morning.
Detectives from the Child Abuse Squad turned up at Alan Jones' luxury apartment down there at Circular Quay.
Following allegations that he indecently assaulted multiple young men.
I'm not going to dwell here on the allegations made about me, other than to say that I refute them entirely.
For decades, Alan Jones made a living from talking, but for the next few months, he will need to sit and listen as the New South Wales local court hears evidence related to more than 20 assault charges. It is a huge moment for someone who at various points of his life has been an Australian cultural, political, even sporting icon, and we'll be keeping you up to speed throughout this trial with the help of ABC court reporter Isabel Rowe. Isabel, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Great to have you with us for this series. We've known each other for years.
We have. Brisbane pals, Queenslanders through and through.
That's it. And we find ourselves on a podcast together, which is the path of everyone from Brisbane. And we thought with the pre-trial hearing starting this week, it'd be a good opportunity to bring everyone up to speed on what's happening with Alan Jones. It's kind of a sort of a soft launch of his trial yesterday. What's going on?
Yeah, so it's a pre-trial hearing, which is like all the legal argument in the lead up to what is going to be a pretty long, potentially 6 week, maybe even longer trial. So it's where the lawyers get together and talk about the sorts of legal issues that are going to come up in what is going to be, we hope, I guess, a pretty interesting case.
Yeah. Before we dive into the pre-trial details and kind of what unfolded yesterday, what is Alan Jones on trial for?
So he's charged with indecent assault and sexual touching without consent. And these are charges that range from 2003 to 2019. So it's over quite a long period. All of these charges he denies.
Right. Okay. And we've got 22 charges here that Alan Jones is facing. There's 20 indecent assault charges and 2 sexual touching charges. And these relate to 6 complainants. Isabel, can you tell me what that means, what these charges may relate to?
It means in this case, essentially, allegedly touching someone on the outside of their clothes. In some cases, the charges mention kissing the complainant on the lips, touching a complainant on their bottom, on their thigh. And in particular, the sexual touching charges relate to something slightly more serious. So the wording of that charge, for example, is kissing the complainant on the corner of his mouth and pushing his body, including his genitalia, against the complainant's upper inner thigh. So it's quite a specific charge in relation to that sexual touching another person charge as well.
Okay, great. Thank you, Isabel. I really appreciate the kind of the distinction and a bit of clarity around that, because I've been reading indecent assault and sexual touching for a couple of weeks now, and in my mind I've been trying to actually work out what acts that may refer to. So to have the sort of specific allegations is really helpful. This is a big story because it involves Alan Jones. Can you give us an idea of how big a deal he is, or I guess probably more reasonably was?
Was, yeah. I mean, Alan Jones is kind of a household name in Sydney for people of a certain era. In the days when you got up in the morning, you turned on the radio and you sort of lived your life by whatever the morning host was talking about. That was Alan Jones for a long period of time in Sydney. He started at the breakfast show on 2UE. He then went to 2GB, so two big commercial radio stations. He had that sort of power that old school big media figures have. He'd dine with the PM, he'd dine with the Premier, he'd go on air to talk about like a really big issue of the day, the sorts of things that he thought, the Battler cared about, you know, people in Sydney's western suburbs. And he made a name for himself sort of standing up for the Battlers, I guess, largely more conservative talking points or things I guess he thought mattered to working class Australians. A lot of what Alan Jones said goes. You know, the Premier would talk about the issues, policies would change. You know, he had some serious power. He also was the Wallabies coach, which I honestly forget. And I feel like a lot of people forgot there for a moment. But in 1984, he was coaching the Australian rugby union team because he started off as a rugby coach. So he's had, you know, plenty of lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the political influence and his role in political life in Australia is something that, you know, for anyone probably under 40 really is hard to understand. And I think certainly not in the political influence side, but in a kind of scale and awareness of a radio personality size, his recognition would probably be a similar level to somebody like Carl Sandilands, probably even greater than someone like Carl Sandilands as well. So he was a huge figure. And I guess, Isabel, it was a real shock when he was arrested.
Yeah, it was a shock. You can kind of imagine the scene of the media all outside of his house. He lives in the Toaster, which if you're a Sydney person, you know, is this big building. To have an apartment there is a pretty big deal. It's at Circular Quay, you know, views of the best bits of Sydney. And, you know, media are all crowded outside his apartment where the car of the, you know, the car that he's in with the cops sort of driving him out. And as the media, you can see the old footage as the media are taking photos by the window, you know, that the flash comes up and you can kind of see in the car for a split second. And there's Alan Jones, you know, in his green tracksuit having been arrested. This is a man that, you know, is a household name across Sydney as a radio presenter. And then he was let out that day at the Day Street Police Station in Sydney to waiting media, again, peppered with questions. And there was just no response from him other than, where is my car, you know, please let me get out of here, essentially.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, it was a massive deal, that arrest.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, for this trial, we're looking at 20-plus assaults, allegations, basically, that are being put before the courts. What's his response to them been?
He's always denied it. He denied it in the first tranche of charges. He denied it when he gave this short sort of press conference outside his first court appearance. He denies it now. He's pled not guilty, and he says that there is just, you know, no case to stand on, and essentially he will have his day in court.
Yeah, okay. The day in court is fast approaching. We're at the pretrial stage at the moment, so that started yesterday and then was promptly adjourned with the parties needing to sort something out. What were they discussing? Where was this kind of going in court yesterday?
Yeah, so it was about an hour and then we all sort of gave up and went home to talk about things without the court being there. But essentially what has been happening in the lead up to this is, you know, the defence has been trying to, you know, have some charges downgraded, to change some of the charges. They said yesterday that they've filed a stay, which could relate to some charges. It's not entirely clear. But it seems to be a discussion that's ongoing with the prosecution about whether or not there is a stay in these proceedings. Mm. There was mention of changes to charges in the court yesterday. Mm. And the DPP said that they understood that the proposition that police seizure of devices was unlawful is no longer being pressed. So this is something that defence has been saying from the beginning of this case. When Alan Jones was arrested, his phones were taken, or a phone, and there was defence were saying from the beginning that they thought that that was unlawfully seized. And now apparently they're not making that claim anymore. So there's things that are happening in the background, clearly in discussion between the defence and the prosecution. Hopefully we're going to hear more about that this week.
Yeah, it was interesting. Almost in what we didn't hear yesterday when I was kind of dialing in and having a listen to the proceedings in the New South Wales local court in this kind of pre-trial process, Alan Jones' arrest was kind of, you know, preceded by some reporting by Kate McClymont from the Sydney Morning Herald. There was a series of stories that she'd put together that kind of pointed to allegations. And there was also a lawyer for the Sydney Morning Herald in court yesterday. There had been a conversation about a media subpoena. Was that documents related to potentially Kate's reporting?
Yeah, so I guess to take us back a bit, the reason that the investigation even started into Alan Jones was because of some media reporting. It was Kate McClymont's stories, the Sydney Morning Herald investigative reporter, that meant police started this investigation. Mm. She spoke to a range of people with various allegations against Alan Jones in 2023, and then basically a year later he was arrested. So in the reporting of that, presumably Kate McClymont has spoken to various people. She's made notes, as journalists do. And so part of the process in this lead up to these hearings has been the defence trying to get a hold of some of those notes.
Got it. Right. You know, you mentioned there that Kate McClymont's spoken to, or potentially spoken to, some of the complainants in this trial and part of her reporting. Do we know much about who they are or what's happened?
Essentially, no. We don't know what charges relate to which people in Kate's stories, if any. You know, we don't know the names of the complainants. You may eventually find out in the process of court reporting, but you, the public, will not know, because that is one of the rules of court reporting of, you know, someone who's a victim of a sexual touching or a sexual abuse claim or anything like that, that they're not identified.
Yep.
So we won't know, we, the audience, won't know who these people are, and we don't know whether or not they've spoken to the Sydney Morning Herald before, if they're people that have come forward since then.
Yeah, okay. Isabel, yesterday in the pretrial hearing, the media got a little mention as well. There's a little conversation back and forth between the parties and the judge in there, with the defence asking if other arrangements could be made in the courtroom so you weren't sitting behind the defence teams instructing solicitors and reading their screens. Does this mean you can't be trusted, Isabel?
Yes, absolutely. You know, on reflecting on this, so the judge basically said, you know, I think it was raised by the defence first. The defence said, could we please have the media not sit behind my instructing solicitors in case they can read their screens? I was one of these people, you know, offending by sitting behind the instructing solicitors. I wish I had X-ray glasses that worked that well, but I could not see their screens. I don't think there was any way that I could. And then the judge said, oh, well, there is room in the dock. Now, on reflection, I thought he meant the lawyers, but I think he might have actually been meaning for the media to sit in the dock, which is all very hilarious. I'm not sure. I guess it's usual for the defence in a particularly high-profile case to be a bit anti the media. It's interesting in this one because Alan Jones is the media, or was the media, so he understands how this works. I think the judge may not love the concept of the media in general. There's been a few things he said in court that makes you think that he's a little bit concerned about reporting in general and having us there. So yeah, perhaps we end up being moved, perhaps the lawyers are being moved to the dock. Who knows?
If it makes you feel any better, Isabel, during the trial of Aaron Patterson, the prosecution had frustrations with the media and the volume of the typing that would occur in the courtroom.
Oh,
and there is a familiar echo of clicking of keyboards. The clackety-clack of the court reporter's keyboards was a frustration of the prosecution at an early stage of that trial. So, you know, it's not just the defence that we wind up every now and then. So it
That's
goes both
good
ways.
To know. Isabel,
something that I find really interesting about this process, I mean, you know, ordinarily we do follow pre-trial hearings and we're in there just to see what's unfolding and get an idea of how a trial may unfold and see if there's things we can report after a trial has concluded, because we can't report pre-trial hearings. How come we can in this instance?
Because there's no jury.
There we go.
Yeah. So this is a judge-only trial. It does happen sometimes, and it's happening in this case, because it's a magistrate's court trial.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a whole bunch of people that could be influenced by media reporting if they go home and Google it at night, instead we have a judge who, as he sort of described, is the judge of law and the judge of fact. He has to decide if the case is going the way that he wants. He also has to decide whether he believes the complainants, whether he believes the allegations. There is no jury to prejudice. So the legal risk for reporting is a lot lower. It's just the judge that could be prejudiced, although we assume that he won't be because that's, you know, he knows how this works. Mm. There is also a risk about witnesses potentially reading media reporting, but it is a lot lower. So in general, it is a lot easier to report pre-trial in this instance, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And as you mentioned, we're in the Magistrates Court, the local court in New South Wales for this trial. Is that because this is where charges like these ones are heard, or is this what the parties wanted?
Look, we don't know entirely what's happened in the background here, but I can tell you what happened. I don't know why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we don't know why the charges were changed, but they were over time, and it has had the effect of lowering the sentencing abilities of the court and lowering essentially the seriousness of the charges. So in the beginning, Alan Jones was actually facing 44 offences relating to 11 complainants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was rearranged in September last year to be 27 charges relating to 9 complainants. None of those new charges had the word aggravated in front of them. So the old charges were slightly more serious. And now without the word aggravated, they are active indecency charges instead. That's a lower class of charge, essentially. So it can be dealt with at a magistrate level and without a jury. And so that means that it doesn't need to go to the district court. It doesn't need to go to the Supreme Court. It's being dealt with at a local court level in New South Wales. And the maximum penalty that you can impose in this level of court is 5 years.
Got it. Thank you for the breakdown. As you mentioned at the start of the episode, the changes keep coming. We actually started the pretrial yesterday with 26 charges relating to 8 complainants. That was 24 indecent assault charges and 2 sexual touching charges. And there was a discussion about that between the parties. That was something they wanted to sort out, and they asked for some time to have a conversation, which is the reason that we only got about an hour or so of pretrial in yesterday. And yeah, this morning they have come back and 4 charges have been dropped. So we now have 22 charges down to 6 complainants. That is 20 indecent assault charges and 2 charges of sexual touching from 6 complainants in this trial. There is plenty unfolding in this pretrial already. Isabel, where do we go from here? Pretrial the rest of this week and then onto the trial?
Yeah, so hopefully we are going to get a lot more clarity today and in following days about how this is going to go, whether there's changes to the charges, whether or not we're talking about the illegal seizure of phones or not, some of those issues I mentioned. It's been set down for a week initially. I guess it could go longer, but by the 3rd of August, that is the beginning of the trial. So these pre-trial issues need to be sorted out. That is when the trial will happen in front of Judge Glenn Walsh in the local court. So there's a bit to go yet, but when we get there, it will be, I think, pretty fascinating.
Yeah, lots of interesting details to unfold. And the deadline of August 3, Judge Glenn Walsh seemed very committed to in court yesterday.
He did, yes. He said it is happening. It's happening. So, yeah, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't know. So perhaps we'll find out about some of that this week.
Yeah, no, there's plenty going on. Really appreciate you joining us for this episode, Isabel, and giving us an insight into what's unfolded briefly yesterday, and also catching us up on the whole story of the charges up against Alan Jones. Thanks for joining us on the pod.
You're welcome.
We'll be back in your feed on Thursday. The best way to listen to the case is on ABC Listen, so grab yourself that app or have a look at the website, and you'll be kept up to date with all of the things that we're covering and working on. The Case of Alan Jones is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by Isabel Rowe and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the land of the Gadigal and Wurundjeri people.